Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the April 21st, 2015 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. We have two public hearings tonight. It's not required that folks sign up to speak at the public hearings. The first one we have is regarding Local Law A of 2015, allowing for sparkling devices to be excluded from the dangerous fireworks definition as permitted by New York State Penal Law Section 405-5B. Be glad to have, I've got a couple of people actually signed up tonight to speak about it, so I'll take them first, and then anyone else who would like to speak. We don't necessarily limit your comments, but we try to hold comments to about 3 minutes or so for folks. If you would please remember there are other people that want to speak, and we have other business tonight. I would call Mr. Fred Kramer. If you could please state your name and where you're from. Go to the microphone back there. Yes, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Fred Kramer. I'm here representing B.J. Allen Phantom Fireworks from Youngstown, Ohio. And I just have a short statement here to read. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to diligently debate and consider the effects of the proposed local law allowing the sale of sparklers and sparkling devices. On behalf of Phantom Fireworks, we continue to support these common sense laws that allow you as elected officials to regulate and monitor the sale and usage of consumer fireworks out in the open. Laws such as this allows for residents, many of which travel out of state to purchase aerial fireworks, to stay at home and celebrate with smaller, safer products, essentially allowing a legal and safer alternative. Today, I'd like to address some of the concerns shared by the members of the fire service community. We have a tremendous amount of respect for these jobs and these men and women perform, and we can understand their concerns, which is why we support such a strictly regulated marketplace like which New York has established. The New York State Department of State has already issued regulations detailing the manner in which these items are to be displayed, stored, including the following. Retail staff handling these devices must be 21 years of age and trained in safety precautions. Every retailer that sells these items must register with the State Office of Fire Prevention and Control to display their registration certificate so that local fire officials will be able to easily identify these locations. The state has adopted the National Fire Protection Association Standard 1124, which is the single most comprehensive fire code in the United States, regulating venues that sell and store consumer fireworks. In addition to the above-mentioned state requirements, NFPA 1124 also addresses aisle widths, fire protection and prevention devices, distances, exits, fuse protection, and a myriad of other requirements to keep the safety level and sales of storage facilities at the highest possible level. A very relevant feature of the new strict storage and display regulation, which we must all abide by, is the fact that sparklers, which New York has permitted, are the wooden stick kind, not metal. These wooden stick sparklers simply ash off as they burn and do not leave the hot metal core that could potentially cause burns. Many of the sparklers' injuries result from children stepping on discarded metal sparklers after they expended their energy and are still hot. This type of injury is eliminated with the wooden stick sparklers. It's always our goal to have the best available products to help people celebrate in a safe manner. Our company conducts training programs for individuals who work in the retail sales venues that we service. We provide each retail customer with a safety brochure in both English and Spanish, as well as having safety tips printed on our shopping bags in which we package the merchandise. We also provide extensive safety information on our website, along with free downloadable safety videos. I want to thank all of you for your time and attention. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, I have Charlie, is it Busey?
Bussey.
Good evening. My name is Charlie Bussey. I'm here representing American Promotional Events, DBA TNT Fireworks out of Florence, Alabama. I also have a short statement that I'd like to read as well. I'd like to start by saying that fireworks are synonymous with the 4th of July celebration since 1777 on our nation's first birthday. Here in Tompkins, it's no different. Illegal fireworks have been bought and sold for decades, funneling tax dollars and profits to other states and black market entities. Citizens are going over the border to Pennsylvania and purchasing illegal and more dangerous items. We all know this is happening. Today is an opportunity for Tompkins County to end this vicious circle. New York is the 47th state to legalize the use of sparklers. When Governor Cuomo signed the bill into law on November 24th of 2014, he and fellow legislators felt that New York could safely operate sparkling devices, just as citizens safely do in 46 other states in which they are currently legal. Just as in Prohibition, alcohol was finding its way onto the streets, illegal fireworks are making their way into Tompkins County. The repeal of Prohibition allowed regulators to control the safety of alcohol, and this resolution is giving Tompkins County the ability to regulate, as well as a disincentive for citizens to seek out improvised and more dangerous explosives. States and municipalities around the country have realized that responsible legislation makes communities safer by regulating the devices that are used. Now that these now legal sparkling devices are meant for backyard family celebrations. Additionally, there will be a tremendous economic impact to the Tompkins County. No longer will citizens of New York have to travel to neighboring states to purchase these devices to celebrate and give their tax dollars to another state. The legislature has vetted the products that are now legal in New York to ensure that the general safety has safe family fun. The only products available in New York are non-aerial, ground-based, or handheld devices. The approved devices in New York do not explode. Skyrockets, bottle rockets, mortars, and firecrackers are not legal. I want to make very clear that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about sparklers and sparkling devices. There are age limits on purchases, meaning children will not be allowed to use any device without proper supervision. Sparklers will only be sold during two distinct periods tied to important celebrations, Independence Day and New Year's. The Federal Department of Transportation has tested and certified the safety of sparklers to be transported. These items do not burn any hotter than a common household match. Now, in 2000, Connecticut legalized the same style of sparklers and fountains that New York did. In the year after Connecticut legalized sparklers, the state saw a 58% decrease in fireworks-related injuries compared to the previous 14 years. Those are the kind of results we expect to see here in Tompkins County as well. In more than 43,000 stores where sparklers are sold, there has never been a fire that resulted in significant life safety or fire issues. Never. This translates into billions of customer contacts throughout the country with no significant incidents. Over the last 25 years, insurance companies and risk management professionals have continually certified these products as safe. Since 1998, 9 states and Puerto Rico have legalized fireworks. Despite the rapid pace of legalization across the country, the Consumer Product Safety Commission wrote in 2014, quote, there is not a statistically significant trend in estimated emergency department treated injuries from 1998 to 2013, end quote. Sparkle use has gone up in the 15-year period significantly, but according to the commission, there's been no statistically significant increase in injuries. Now, I just want to note, I'll go off script here and just note that, you know, we're for safety. Our company is for safety. Our company is for having a fun and a safe and regulated product, and that's what we're for. And that's what we're here to advocate for as well, to give your constituents the ability to purchase devices that they're probably already purchasing elsewhere, but allowing the tax revenue to come here and allowing you to have more control over the regulation of these devices. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Others who would like to speak regarding this local law? Chief Parsons, welcome.
Thank you. As most of you know, my name is Tom Parsons. I'm the chief of the Ithaca Fire Department. Thank you for your time and allowing me to take a few minutes of your time to speak about this important item. I want to just share with you one of the important misnomers about the sparkler legislation. This is not about sparklers. It's been alluded to that it's about sticks and sparklers. It's more. There are more devices, handheld displays that can be clustered together, be set on the ground in family celebrations, as the industry speaks to. And if I think about family, and I hope you do too, we're talking about likelihood of children being around these devices. These devices burn at very high temperatures, 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit or hotter. When come in contact with human skin, it causes third-degree full-thickness burns. I'm not sure what a family celebration would be like if we had to worry about whether our children were going to be around these devices that people are going to be allowed to use. Now, the second point I also want to bring up is what happens when these devices are not being sold. As you know, the legislation stipulates that it will be sold between December 26th and January 2nd, and between June 1st and July 5th. In the meantime, where is this so-called storage going to happen? Well, frankly, the building codes, fire code of New York State, allows up to 125 pounds of this material to be stored anywhere without placarding, without signage, and without notification. Emergency responders could be responding to your local convenience store, local retail store, where this is stored without proper notification or awareness. We live in small communities. Signs get covered up. Placards get forgotten to be displayed. Your local fire company may be asked to respond to a place that's burning and walk into a room with the attempt of controlling the fire, preventing property damage, possibly loss of life, and be unaware that there could be pyrotechnics of this quantity in a space that could cause serious injury to firefighters. It's something I'm concerned about, and my firefighters are certainly going to be concerned about it, not knowing what they may be walking into. I appreciate the interest of the economics of having these devices sold in Tompkins County. Before you, you've had many resolutions in support of different things to come for you that is supposedly good for the economy, good for our environment, safer for our community. We've all heard that, and I know this board has rejected those when it really looks at the facts and the potential harm that certain things could happen to people. I would encourage you to please look through what I sent you earlier in a communication and ask for you to consider, is this something really we want to support in our community? Our belief in the fire service is fireworks should be left to the experts. There's clearly strong regulations in New York State for public displays of fireworks to be done safely. This is not stuff that we should be allowed in our backyards where children can get hurt. Thank you.
Thank you. Others would like to speak. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Bill Gilligan. I live in the town of Ithaca, but I'm here as the chairman of the Board of Ithaca Fire Commissioners. I would echo and support the words that the chief has just spoken. And the board passed a resolution at our meeting last Tuesday encouraging this group to not pass legislation allowing the sparklers to be sold in Tompkins County. We feel very strongly that this is a bad step and a bad move for the county to begin sale of these items. I would just read a remark from FASNY, the Firemen's Association of the State of New York, regarding one of the issues that they see. Although this legislation would limit the sale of these sparklers and novelty devices to a certain time of year, the statistics show that it would still place a large portion of the community at risk. Research from the United States Consumer Products Commission shows that 60% of all firework injuries in the U.S. actually occur during the 30 days surrounding July 4th, at a rate of just under 200 injuries a day nationally for this period. More than half of these reported injuries involved burns to the hands, head, and face. About 1,000 reported injuries involved sparklers and bottle rockets, fireworks that are frequently and incorrectly considered safe for young children. Furthermore, it must be noted that although the legislation only authorizes the sale of fireworks for a certain time of year, in most cases people will buy, store, and use these fireworks throughout the year. Thus, our first responders will be responding to the incidents resulting from fireworks throughout the year. The inherent risks not only associated with use of fireworks, but also the proper storage raise concerns by our members. The statistics show, as does our experience, that the danger to the community and our first responders is substantial. For these reasons, I encourage you to not act hastily on this legislation. I know the public hearing was scheduled tonight, and you have this on your agenda for later this evening, but I would encourage you, if you do not vote against it, to at least defer a vote on this until further public input can be received. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Anyone else? Lee Shurtleff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lee Shurtleff, reside in the village of Groton. And my friends, I'll leave the differing statistics and hazards of this decision to others to explain. All I can say is that when the discussion is not about whether a product is dangerous, but rather how dangerous, I think we're treading on a slippery slope. I think it misleading and problematic that the industry will cite and tout compliance with the National Fire Protection Standards for this decision before you tonight, when the NFPA very clearly states that it is opposed to any consumer use of fireworks and encourages people to enjoy public displays that comply with NFP 1123, and that is directly from their website. The driving argument, as I understand it, for those who advocate for this exclusion lies in the potential sales tax dollars that could come from the sale of these products in Tompkins County. And let me call your attention that the sale would only be permitted in the months of June and early July and in the last week of December, when upwards of a quarter of our population are absent from the county due to the breaks at the colleges. If by some wild occurrence, say 100,000 packages of sparklers and similar products were sold in Tompkins County at an average cost of maybe $5 a box, you would be looking at sales in the $500,000 range. That would generate a total of $40,000, give or take, in sales tax revenue, half of which goes directly to the state of New York. Under our sales tax distribution, the county would see maybe a little over $10,000 in that annual sales, while the other 16 municipalities, who basically bear the costs of fire response and fire protection, would have collectively less than $10,000. What the industry and the state do not tell you is that in addition to the sales tax, every distributor, manufacturer, wholesaler, and retailer of these products will pay fees in the hundreds and in some cases thousands of dollars to the state of New York for the privilege to sell here in Tompkins County and for the permitting and regulating of these devices. And the state will retain those dollars for the inspection and enforcement, not the local governments. Once again, the state of New York has very skillfully and subtly shifted the entire burden, societal and economic costs and consequences of the decision you have to make tonight to the county level, where it stands to extract, while it, the state, stands to extract the vast financial proceeds of your decision. What our local governments will get is not just a pittance, but an insult. I've long admired the principled decision-making that Tompkins County exemplifies and conscientiously follows. I know this body is one that has never been hesitant to be painted in a different color than the rest of the state when it comes to balancing the concerns for the health and safety of its residents against the lure of dubious dollars. As your fire coordinator, one thing I never want to do is stand before the media and have to explain that a child was injured or a home was lost because of the sale of an inherently unsafe product that was sanctioned and permitted by the county. I appreciate your consideration and hope that you can take these thoughts into account tonight. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Anyone else like to speak on this issue? Dooley?
I guess I'd need to speak under this provision. I had wanted to convey, by way of reaction to all of the correspondence we have received in the last day or two, a suggestion for a change in our local law to require signage on buildings where fireworks of any sort are stored. And that was all I wanted to say. But tonight I've heard two different things. One is it's already in the New York state law, and the other is it isn't. So I would like to know whether it's actually already in place or whether this is a change that we could make in our local law. And maybe the county attorney could respond at some point.
Thank you, Dooley. Anyone else want to speak? Jonathan, do you happen to know the answer to that question that was just raised?
Um, In terms of signage, I can't say for sure, but there is a New York State law which governs the display of fireworks and usage, and the issue is whether that is meant to exclude local regulation of that. And there's a good argument to be made that it is, that the rules set forth by New York State are not meant to be in addition to local rules, but are meant to be the rules. So I couldn't say for sure, but certainly it would raise a legal issue. Let's put it that way.
Thank you. We can debate it. I wanted to turn to Dan at some point. Did you want to speak to this?
Question for the first two speakers, that they said what companies they represented, but I didn't hear where they are from. One Ohio, one Alabama. Would you go to the microphone? And my question is, where do you reside? That's what we usually ask.
They told us.
We record it. We record this, so you have to go to the mic.
Yes, my name is Charlie Bussey. I represent TNT Fireworks. Our parent company is American Promotional Events. We're based out of Florence, Alabama, but I live in Syracuse.
You live in Syracuse. And the first speaker?
My name is Fred Kramer with Phantom Fireworks, and I live in Pennsylvania.
Thank you very much.
I do have an answer for the question that the lady asked. The legislation does mandate that every retail that sells consumer fireworks must register and display that registration certificate at the place of sale so that everybody's aware that is there. The vast majority of all fireworks get sent back to the warehouse afterwards, at least all the tents and the stores and that sort of thing that sell them. That's what happens to most of those. So I'm not seeing a huge warehouse full of fireworks in anybody's future.
Yeah. And if I can speak just briefly to that as well, we have contracts with Walmarts, Big Lots, Kmarts, Sam's Clubs. We sell these products in their stores. They don't want to keep these things around past July 4 because they're seasonal. And so we have contracts that we have to pick these things up from them and take them back to our warehouse in Pennsylvania for storage. So storage shouldn't be a big issue here because we take that back. We don't leave it in the state as well. And to your question about is this actually in the law, Governor Cuomo signed a law allowing for these devices to be excluded from the definition of dangerous fireworks and left it up to each county to opt in. And so far, something like 13 counties in the state have opted in, and only one has voted to not opt in so far.
Before I close the public hearing, Dan Klein chairs our Government Operations Committee, and Dan, this legislation went through your committee, and I know you have a feeling about this. You want to say something?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So in the last 24 hours, I have heard from five different fire and EMS organizations in Tompkins County concerned about this law. And given that it happened on such a short time span, and given that we're having a public hearing tonight but we do not need to vote, that I would like to exercise my right as chair of government operations to withdraw this from the agenda tonight.
Is it your intention to bring it back at some point?
Yes, I would expect that it would be on our next meeting on May 5th.
So the reason I turned to Dan at this point was so folks in the audience would know that. We'll actually formally withdraw it a little later in the agenda. Carol?
Well, if that's the case, I am going to have to miss a meeting later in May, the first meeting in May. So in case, can I give some comments now?
Sure.
The hearing, or I'll do it under
the hearing's still open. If you'd like to speak on the hearing, you may.
Okay. I spent time in Central and South America at Christmas and New Year's one year, and at midnight, first for weeks before Christmas and New Year's, in every town square was filled to bursting with stalls of really dangerous fireworks of all kinds, not just the devices we're talking about. At midnight on those holidays, you could hear all over town those things going off. And actually, the person I was traveling with was out there in the streets with six-year-old kids, six- and ten-year-old kids, setting off these devices. And I was, and then you'd hear at midnight, you heard all these things going off at once. And it, a minute after midnight, you heard ambulances throughout the cities. I was appalled. I thought, oh, my gosh, this is what regulation is for. On the other hand, I've been here in Tompkins County at lake houses or other places with parties at July 4th with people who had gone to Pennsylvania and had purchased devices, and they were very pretty, and I spent the entire time petrified that police were going to show up and arrest us, and we were going to be criminalized for engaging in something, you know, the pretty stuff, that I thought, you know, this doesn't need to be a criminal activity, and I don't need to feel criminalized. And in general, I tend to feel that way. It did give me pause to have gotten the mail that we did from the firefighters, and I do take those concerns seriously, and I think we should take them into account. But I'm sitting here thinking about the things that we store in our garages and that we have at our homes, the chemicals that we have, the gasoline for our lawnmowers, our gas grills, if we're going to put kids outside running around with somebody flipping hamburgers. That, to me, is in some ways more dangerous because they're running around where the grills are. So I think there, we need public education for the things that we allow, but I'm not sure we need to criminalize this. So those are the things I'm sitting here thinking about that are going around in my head. And, I mean, if we are going to have to vote on this now, although I think there needs to be public education about this, like about many of the things that we engage in and that we regulate at certain levels but not at others, I think that, and I'm willing to take more input if I do end up being here when we vote. I think that all things being equal, I would be in favor of public education on this one, and adding it to the list of things that our fire teams bring to the community, as they excellently talk about, you know, all of the things that are unsafe and safe practices around the home in many ways. So thank you very much, Carol, for coming out, though, and speaking on all sides of this issue.
If there are no other comments, I'm going to close this public hearing. So I'll close this hearing, and I will open the public hearing on Local Law Number C, a local law of 2015, a local law governing the sale, application, and disposal of waste associated with oil and natural gas exploration and storage activities. Is there anyone who'd like to speak on this local law? Mr. Wilson.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. I'm Joe Wilson. I live in Dryden, and I think that I'm the only speaker because the vast majority of the population wants you to pass this law. We need not be the toilet for frack waste here in Tompkins County. The stuff is dangerous. It's toxic, and I think you're all lined up to vote in the proper way to ban it from this county, and I commend you for that. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak? I don't see anyone. Therefore, I'm going to close this public hearing. Now I'm going to open our meeting. I wonder if you'd please stand with me and recite the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. May we have the roll call.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Sigler has asked to be excused. Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera? Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
13 members present.
We have a quorum. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
This time of year, we take a little time to recognize our own here at the county, people who have served for a number of years, and we like to give out certificates of appreciation in five-year increments. Peter Stein, would you come up, please? Peter, we're going to give you a certificate of appreciation for 5 years associated with Tompkins County.
Well, I've certainly enjoyed the 5 years. It doesn't go fast. It's been like 50. But every year has got its own interests, and I find the whole being on the legislature to be perhaps the most satisfying thing I've done in my life in this kind of this kind of activity. So it's been a pleasure, and thank you very much for recognizing.
Thank you, Peter. I'm not aware that we need an executive session tonight, John or Joe. Is that correct?
Right.
We'll move to privilege of the floor for the public. This is the opportunity in which the public has to speak to us for up to 3 minutes. We ask anyone who would like to speak to please fill out one of the blue cards. And by filling that out, they're agreeing to our rules, which are the person is agreeing to a 3-minute time limit, agreeing not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak in a or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. I agree that if I cause a disruption and am asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. We will grant 3 minutes. We have a clock. At the end of the 3 minutes, there will be an audible signal. Sounds like a telephone ring. And we've asked it, if you haven't finished by then, to please conclude. The first card I have is Amanda Manfredo.
This one okay?
Yes.
Yes, it is. All right. I'm Amanda Manfredo. I live in Danby, and I'm here to talk about the resolution about the fast track for TPP. The fast track negotiating authority for trade agreements, also called the Trade Promotion Authority, or TPA, is a temporary authority that the U.S. Congress can grant to the U.S. President to negotiate international trade agreements. Congress then gives an up or down vote, but they cannot amend or filibuster the negotiated agreement, and in fact, they probably won't even have time to read it in the 90 days that they get before it's time to vote. Right now, Congress is deciding whether to grant President Obama this authority so he can negotiate the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, or it's also known as the Southern Hemisphere Asian Free Trade Agreement, or SHAFTA. One of the chambers of the chapters, that is, of the TPP is called the Investor State Dispute Settlement, or ISDS. This is basically a court that grants a foreign investor or corporation an arena in which to sue governments. John Echeverria, a law professor at Georgetown, has called ISDS the biggest threat to United States judicial independence that no one has heard of and fewer people understand. I'm not sure exactly what he means by fewer people than none, but I'm here to tell you what I know about it. Despite claims by the U.S. trade rep of transparency, the ISDS chapter will not be declassified until 4 years after the TPP comes into force or trade negotiations end if it fails. The ISDS forces the public to subsidize the risk of transnational investment abroad and effectively encourages outsourcing. The transnational companies could alternatively mitigate their own risk by purchasing private insurance policies. Now, as I mentioned, the ISDS is an arena for corporations to sue governments at all levels in our hierarchical system here. So if our town has a local ban against fracking, the town can get sued for lost profits that a fracking company would make. If our state has enacted a minimum wage law, the state can get sued for lost profits associated with those higher wages. And if our country has a ban on selling toys that have lead paint, our country can be sued for lost profits that a company would get by selling those dangerous toys. This is not speculation of what might happen. In the language of your resolution, the case of Philip Morris in Australia is mentioned, and that's what's going on there. This creates a chilling effect of investor-state dispute settlement mechanisms where this is the prospect that governments may not want to make these kind of laws that are good for public safety because they're afraid that they'll be contested by corporations in these tribunals. The ISDS undermines U.S. sovereignty by allowing tribunals to effectively overturn U.S. laws. The ISDS would bypass the U.S. legal system that we have in place with the U.N. or the World Bank tribunals. And our own New York Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer was recently quoted as saying about the ISDS, "It seems to indicate that savvy, deep-pocketed foreign conglomerates could challenge a broad range of laws we pass at every level of government, such as Made in America laws or anti-tobacco laws. I think people on both sides of the aisle will have trouble with this. Now, if you think that's bad, it gets worse."
Thank you. Victor Tiffany, then Teresa Ault.
Yes, I'm Victor Tiffany, also in the town of Danby. Amanda was right. The ISDS tribunals get worse. The elite law firms that handle these lawsuits charge $600 to $700 per lawyer per hour, leading to no motivation to expedite these proceedings. The Organization for Economic Development and Cooperation has calculated, looking at recent cases, the average cost per party per case is $8 million. $8 million. Under the TPP, 9,000 more foreign transnational corporations would be empowered to sue the United States and other countries. This is a tight knit of special corporate lawyers who are involved with these tribunals. So far, 15 lawyers have handled 55% of these decisions. This is a very small group of specialized lawyers. Some of them serve as lawyers for the transnational corporations on one case and then serve as judges, adjudicators, in another case, which is a clear conflict of interest. So far, there have been about 600 of these cases before the world. This isn't a new legal order. And Gus Van, I'm losing his last name, Hilton, has looked at the data and come to the determination that there's a clear pro-corporate bias in these settlement cases, and it gets worse. There is no appeal. All decisions are final. And when they consider each and every case, they never consider precedent. And these cases, these courts, these tribunals are unidirectional, right? Transnational corporations can sue governments, but governments can't sue the corporations. Now, Japan has stated that if Fast Track fails in Congress, the TPP will fall apart. That's the good news, but now we have to get Fast Track to fail. Now, I don't have time to discuss the regulatory coherence chapter, which was leaked in 2010. But it'll set up a national bureaucracy to make coherent policy between national, state, and local levels. This is a local concern. And for many of us, we feel this is going to be one of the most important votes you take this year because this is important. A no vote on this resolution tonight is going to tell your constituents that you put the interests of foreign transnational corporations against the interests of your constituents, the taxpayers, because we're the ones who are going to have to end up paying for these settlements. Thank you.
Thank you. Teresa Ault. Then Joe Wilson.
Teresa Ault, City of Ithaca. I'm a volunteer with the Tompkins County Workers Center and have been authorized to speak on behalf of the Workers Center in support of the resolution before you that urges defeat of Fast Track in Congress. If Fast Track were passed and then used to ram through the Trans-Pacific Partnership and similar agreements, protections for local workers that we seek from the county legislature and often from the state as well could very well end up being undermined, thrown out by tribunals that act only in the interests of transnational corporations. I won't go into details because the resolution itself lays them out very well. Thank you for paying attention to this threat to our well-being.
Thank you. Joe Wilson.
Joe Wilson. I live in Dryden. I have two items now, two and a half, that I will get into the 3 minutes that I'm allotted. First, I want to call your attention to the Tompkins County Climate Protection Initiative meeting this Friday. It's going to be at the Chamber of Commerce meeting room, 904 East Shore Drive. And I particularly want to call your attention to the fact that Bob Howarth and Tony Ingraffia, who caused a stir, changed the course of research on methane emissions across the world, and not incidentally got on into Time magazine in their issue 1 year of people who changed the course of important events. They're updating their methane emissions research of 4 years ago. And in particular, it's important here and to us in this county because they are going to address the issue of the impact of the West Dryden pipeline and the emissions that will come from burning gas therefrom on the county's goals for greenhouse gas emissions reduction. To the credit of the planning staff, Tony and Bob, they've already begun to compare their data and look at the methods of calculation so that it's my understanding as a layperson that they'll be talking about oranges and oranges and apples when Tony and Bob make their presentation this Friday. I urge any and all of you who can to come. Bob will be presenting. Tony is going to be elsewhere, but Bob will be presenting starting around 10 o'clock. So that's my number one. My second one is to commend my town board in Dryden. There were 10 pages worth of amendments that could impact the zoning law that was just approved by the courts a couple of years ago, including the fracking ban, and the amendments were, pardon my judgment on this, poorly written and explained not at all before they came before the board for public hearing and possible vote. The wisdom of the board was to announce at the beginning of the hearing that they would not vote, which caused a number of us who had great problems with the procedure as well as the substance of the amendments to be grateful that they took that wise step. We're looking forward now to some public workshops and then bringing the matter back to a vote. So I want to thank the town board for doing that. And in my last 8 seconds, I want to echo those who spoke against the TPP and the fast track. I absolutely agree. It's a dangerous way to proceed. Thank you.
Thanks for your comments. Have Jeff Shepherdson from Newfield. Did you want to speak on about municipality on the privilege of the floor for municipal official?
Yes, please.
All right. Well, welcome. Tell us about what's going on in Newfield.
Well, thank you. Actually, I'm not here to speak about Newfield particularly. I'm here to speak on behalf of CDRC and the Tompkins County Council of Governments with a training initiative that we've been developing over the last 2 years. And you have a handout in front of you that we passed out before most of you arrived. And this actually just gives a brief overview of this training initiative entitled Facilitating Effective Participation in the Heated Public Meeting. And this is a collaborative between Don Barber and myself. We've been working at this pretty consistently now for a couple of years. And just in the spirit of trying to inculcate a greater community, especially around some of the difficult issues that often get brought up before local municipalities, a skill-building effort to help folks better attend to those tough conversations that often erupt in municipal council meetings. So, case in point, one of our recent persons who went through a training that we held recently, we've been attempting to do these periodically around the county, asked that I come and observe one of her, this was a member from the Common Council, to observe one of her neighborhood meetings that she had just last week around a fairly contentious issue. And she wanted me to come because she was going to use some of the principles that we, Don and I, had been working with them on, and she did a terrific job. Really utilized the skills well, and afterwards I was waiting to speak with her, but got beat to speaking with her by a person who came up and said, "You did a terrific job. This is one of the best meetings I've ever been to." So she kind of looked at me out of the corner of her eye. I thought, we did a good job there, didn't we, Don? So this is the kind of work that we're hoping to do more of in the county. And the town of Dryden and the town of Caroline are co-sponsoring a training in October. We're talking with the city and the town of Ithaca to sponsor a training, hopefully later in the summer. The reason I'm here to speak with you about this training is to give you a heads up, to get on your radar for just a moment. If you see this and you'd like to participate in that, we'd love to have you speak a good word about it. Check in with us if you have questions about it, and or even if the legislature wants to sponsor a training at some point in the coming year, we'd be really more than happy to speak with you about that. So I think that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming. Don's name was down here, Don Barber, but has he left?
Don had to leave. He had a meeting in Caroline, so he gives you his apologies.
Well, thank you for staying and speaking to us.
Mike?
Yes, Marklin.
Question for Jeff.
Sure.
The handout doesn't...
Jeff?
The handout doesn't mention a date. Is this just about the program, but there's no... Is there an upcoming date?
This is about the program, primarily to inform you of what's happening. There are no training scheduled at this point until October. October 10th, I believe, is the only one scheduled. So we're looking to get some more scheduled.
All right. Thanks very much.
All right. Let's move on. Privilege of the floor for legislators. Who would like to speak tonight? Nathan, you look serious. Carol?
Look, I did hear an interesting fact that the Cleveland Clinic last week reported that since they have had since Obamacare has come about, the number of uninsured that they have been seeing through their Cleveland through their clinics and through their hospitals, and they have many hospitals and service and something like, oh gosh, I forget the exact number of patients, but they're about 10 times the size of Guthrie, if that gives any sense of scale. And but they saw a 40% reduction in the number of uninsured. And that's actually helped their bottom line by tens of millions of dollars. And so they said it's been a big success because it's supported their healthcare system, but at the same time has reduced the number of uninsured. So I thought it was an interesting fact and thought I'd share.
Thank you. Carol?
I want to let my colleagues know that I'm going to miss a few meetings, and the public, that I am going to miss a few meetings. I love you dearly. I agree with Peter. The years get longer as you go on, too. But I'm expecting the second and third of three grandchildren that I'm having within, it was supposed to be within a six-week period. We'll see. The first came early, and the next two are coming any week now or any day. I've got my bag packed. So I do apologize, and that's where I'll be. I will be available by email, by phone, on my cell phone, and please don't hesitate to call me. Anything that I'm allowed to participate in, except for the actual days of the births, I will call into if I'm allowed to. I wanted to reinforce and give the time and the place, because it went by quickly, the event that Joe Wilson was talking about, TICP meetings. I don't know that they're totally open to the public, but I think, you know, if you ask, and certainly people from the legislature, I'm sure, would be welcome guests. They're meeting this Friday from 9 to 11. Their meeting is at the Chamber of Commerce, and they are first going to hear from somebody who has a construction company that's been building residential units, Kendall and Mike, Carpenter. Read my handwriting. Carpenter are going to talk about building residential units with over 80% less energy use than typical units. I think that was one of the projects that was connected to our own Climate Showcase Communities grant, Climate Smart, Climate Showcase. Communities. And then we are really extremely fortunate to have Bob Howarth and Tony Ingrafia in this community. They have really, in addition to their academic work, have really gone bent over backwards to make sure that the public can understand what they're talking about with climate change issues and the issues related to methane. And do I have the time right, Joe? I see you standing by the microphone. I had
two things. Peter Bardaglio indicated that he would be delighted if any of the folks here assembled came this Friday. One, and Bob will be speaking roughly about 10 o'clock, but it is a 9 to 11 meeting.
Okay, and if members of the public want to go, Peter Bardaglio, go search for Tompkins County Climate Protection Initiative and ask them if they have enough room for you to be a guest. They'll be talking about giving this update. They came here, if you'll recall, about 5 or 6 years ago when we were first talking about our own attitudes and things we were going to pass about climate change here at the legislature. They came and put a lot of time and effort into educating us, and I do hope that somebody from here can go and report back. I know I can't, and Martha, you said you can't. So I hope that somebody will go, and if they have new information, especially, I do wonder whether it would make sense to maybe have them back here to give us an update. I think that would be an interesting thing to do. It's been long enough that there is information. They had information for us about some of the information that we use in our own climate projections and ways in which we might update the way we've approached it, even in our recent comprehensive plan that was too much for us to handle at the time, but I think it's something worth learning as we go along. So I would encourage us to do that, and Mike, maybe you can look into that. Thanks very much.
Next I have Jim Dennis, then Martha Roberts.
I have a question, and my question is to either Joe or Carol. I'm hearing about this meeting. It sounds like we have to be invited in. Who is the meeting for? If it's not for the public, who is it for?
The members of the Tompkins County Climate Protection Initiative.
I understand that. They're having a meeting at the chamber of. Let me finish. They're having the meeting at the chamber office, right? In the big meeting room at the chamber office. Okay, who are they talking to there?
It's a group that meets monthly. They have members. They have things that they work on that go on from month to month. It isn't a public group,
but people
who are interested in being involved in climate protection initiatives and work, they welcome people to join them. Their monthly meetings are not necessarily open to the public to come with a question and answer time, other than minimal amounts of
Carol's
time.
Answering your question.
I interrupt? So it's a meeting that is generally held within a group, and that's the room that they meet in all the time on a monthly basis?
Sometimes
or they move around the community?
They're not
public meetings.
They often meet at the Tompkins County Library. They're a big enough group that they need a fairly sizable room.
I have all the information I need. Thanks.
Martha Robertson.
Well, I think the membership is pretty fluid, and I've gone many times, but not, you know, it really ebbs and flows. And there, I'm going to guess, the last meeting I happened to go to, there was something like 50 people, and I'm sure easily 25 of them weren't members of something. So this is, anybody can go, I'm sure. They usually meet at the library, at the Borg Warner Room. For whatever reason, they're meeting at the chamber. I don't think that means that it's a chamber meeting, though. So. My comment on this is that Bob Howarth had sent me this summary of the information by email, and I said, well, that's very interesting. I hope you're talking to Ed Marks and Katie Borghella about this. And Ed's ears, I don't know if ears are burning, but he said yes. He sent it to Ed and Katie, and that he was corresponding with Ed about this. Since it has to do with the county's estimate of greenhouse gas emissions and based on our 2008 estimate. So I'm sure the information will appropriately get to at least the peak committee and, you know, maybe the full legislature. If anybody wants to go on Friday morning, I'm sure that would be more than welcome. But I'm also sure that the information will find its way back to us.
Peter Stein.
It was very short, but it was interesting what you had to say, Nathan. And I had something that I read in the paper today that really warmed the cockles of my heart. But from the Washington Post, for the first time, a poll of Americans showed that more of them liked Obamacare than disliked it. That's the first time that's happened. So we may be on the right track. So.
Less limit being Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to take this opportunity to speak a little bit about the reentry program. You all should have gotten on your desk a little quarter card that's announcing a play for tomorrow, brought to us by Civic Ensemble. It is called A Setback Ain't Nothing But a Setup for a Comeback. These are short plays that are written by members of our community who were formerly incarcerated or in our community now. The entire reentry movement, of which we in Tompkins County have been a part, lots of us have been involved with the reentry movement, really is looking at how do we address the issue of people who are coming out of our prison system and our jail system and helping them to reintegrate into our community in ways that are meaningful for them so that it is not that revolving door that they end up going back in because, one, we can't find employment, there's so many barriers. So the entire reentry program has been focused on looking at this issue, an issue that we in our public safety committee for many, many years have been talking about. So it's good to have community buy-in to try to find solutions to address the issue. One of the ways is being creatively offered to us through this play that is coming up tomorrow at the Hangar Theater, as I said earlier, brought to us by Civic Ensemble and a number of other community sponsors and support agencies. I think there are six or seven, might be more than that, playwrights who are sharing their stories and the stories of not just being incarcerated, but what happens when I come out. What has the story of my life been when I'm here trying to have a meaningful, productive life? Very powerful, and I certainly encourage all of you, if time permits in your schedule, to go see it. We at GIAC are offering shuttle rides for those who might not be able to get to the theater. A lot of people who want to get there, the hangar is not very close. Starting at 5:45, the play begins at 6:30. So we have one of our vans at GIAC offering shuttles to people who would like to get there and back, and we will bring you back to GIAC. So you have to come to GIAC. It is free, but you do have to call and reserve a seat or a ticket, although it is free and open to the public. The idea behind this is to also have employers present who can interact with some of these formerly incarcerated members in their community and hear what's been going on, what has been the barriers, and hopefully some of our employers can work with their colleagues to help remove some of those barriers so that our friends and neighbors can have access to employment opportunities as easily as many of us who have not had the experience of being incarcerated have. So I just wanted to share that. Sarah Chalmers Simmons was here earlier. She had to leave because this is dress rehearsal night, of course. So she had to leave, but she intended on being here for the public speak and to share this information. So please, if you can, try to go. Please pass the word. 6:30 tomorrow, Wednesday the 22nd, Hangar Theater. Reentry Theater Program presents a setback. Ain't nothing but a setup for a comeback. Our very own OAR is involved as well. An evening of plays by formerly incarcerated individuals at the Hangar Theater. Reserve free tickets. That's my announcement.
Thank you, Lawson. Sounds like an interesting event there. Kathy Luz Herrera.
Thank you. So, after such a tough winter, we like to celebrate. Anybody go to the Ithaca Fringe Festival this last weekend? Yeah, I bet Dan can tell us about it, and that would be great. People open up their houses, art, all kinds of things. Something else coming this weekend, and a few people called to tell me it's not May 5th. That is Cinco de Mayo. The Cinco de Mayo celebration is going on at the same time as the Streets Alive celebration, which will be from GIAC to the high school. Am I right? And this is a fun time to get out and play. You can walk, ride your skateboard, not me, but you can, bicycle, whatever. Just get out there and play. Hula hoop, whatever you want to do. Visit with people you haven't seen all winter. It's a fun thing, and that's May 3rd, this coming weekend, and that's where I got confused. The Cinco de Mayo celebration won't be on the Cinco de Mayo, but it'll be on May 3rd, which makes sense because people can get to it, and it'll be at GIAC. So come on, let's get out and play.
Anyone else want to speak first? I've got Carol and Martha would like to speak again. Carol, then Martha.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to tell people what my hesitation was about publicizing the TICP event. I'll refresh people's memories that this community, if you start publicizing, and not even actively publicizing, if you send around information about a climate change event here and say, please circulate, you easily get 200 people or more, 200 or 300 people in a room. And I'll refresh your memories that when we made a concerted effort on our original anti-fracking, the public hearing on fracking, we got over 900 people. That's how this community opened with this. So that was my only hesitation about inviting people, is that the people who are in this room and actively watching who'd be inclined to come, there would be room space in the room. But if those people start sending out notices and say, please circulate, that would be the concern, is where we'll exceed fire limits there, and we don't want to do that. Thanks.
Martha?
Thank you very much, Mike. Also May 3rd. Streets Live is like 12 to 5? 1
to
5. 1 to 5. Well, at 2:30 the same afternoon is a commemorative service, a celebration of Stu Stein's life at the Statler Auditorium at Cornell. 2:30 May 3rd. As
I think everybody in this room remembers Stu very fondly with as one of our really visionary leaders in so many areas. You know, helped to set up the tourism program, helped to set up TCAD as our economic development agency, helped to set up the or created the Poet Laureate program, Mega Municipal Electric and Gas Alliance, and I'm sure I'm missing probably half a dozen really big things. But he died over the winter and he died June 24th last year at age 84, and the community celebration is Sunday, May 3rd. So, thank you.
All right. Can we move on? Thank you. For Chair's report, I would just like to mention that this time of year, when we're starting to smell budget across the county, looking at it from very early on, and looking at the work that's being done very, very well in our county administration and starting our department heads, it's sort of like a sausage being made at this point, trying to get some estimates. So I know there's a lot of work going on, and that administration wants very much to be able to give you as much information as possible. They don't like to blow their own horn very much, but on the budget retreat coming up on the 27th, I think they're going to be ready to talk to you about different areas of the budget that will be very, very useful in our planning. I have, I don't have any chair's appointments tonight. But I will move next to our county administrator, Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Mike. And I was just going to kind of begin emitting that smell of the budget, I guess, for the coming year. We are very budget-focused right now. So over the past couple of weeks, we spent most of our time trying to get good assumptions for next year. It's very early in the process, obviously. But still, the process that we've done here, which works, I think, tremendously well in setting targets and goals very early in the process, we want to come into that meeting Tuesday night prepared for it. Mike has said we're going to give it our best shot. It's going to be the first time in a long time that not only are we talking about dark clouds, but there are a couple silver linings, which you don't hear me talk about very often. So we will include all that in the budget retreat next Monday at 5:30 at TCAT. So that's my report.
Thank you, Joe. Questions for Joe? That was easy. Jonathan Wood is our county attorney.
Thanks. I wanted to, finish my report, which I started last time on Dr. Fox. As most of you know, Dr. Fox recently passed away before our last board meeting. Dr. Fox was on the Board of Health for 20 years, and he was president of the Tompkins County Board of Health for 13 years. But he's probably most famous for having F.H. Fox is 92 and various ages on the overpass on Route 366. So I figured I'd tell everybody the real story behind that because not too many people really know it. Dr. Fox was a professor at the veterinary school for many years. I can't tell you how many, but he was my father's professor back then, so it was a long time. He was well regarded by his students, but had a somewhat controversial relationship. So back, I believe it was in 1991, Dr. Fox was 69. And under the rules at the time at Cornell, professors had to retire when they were 70. So his students were constantly teasing him about him having to retire when he was 70. And they assured him that they would let the dean know that he was 70. So on the night before Dr. Fox's 70th birthday, the students went up and painted over the overpass on Route 366 that F.H. Fox is 70 because the dean of the veterinary school would drive in to the Vettis School on that road. So they wanted to make absolutely sure that the dean knew that Dr. Fox was 70 and had to retire. And that's how it started. And, of course, the dean did pass that day and see that F.H. Fox was 70, and Dr. Fox did have to retire. Of course, he stayed on as an emeritus professor. And then every year after that, on his birthday, his class at the veterinary school would change it just so it would be accurate. And they did that for 22 years, and Dr. Fox died at 92 very recently. So I'm sure most people didn't know that story, but that's it.
John, I don't imagine there's much graffiti out there with that much history.
Probably not. So, other than that, I have no report.
Thank you. Director of Finance, Rick Snyder.
And I have no report for tonight either. Thank you.
We're going fast tonight. I don't see any staff we have to recognize tonight. Are there resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda? Dan Klein.
Yes, I'd like to withdraw Resolution O.
Withdrawn. Anything else? Dave McKenna.
Resolution E.
You're going to withdraw Resolution E?
My understanding is it does not require going through the legislature. It can be done through committee.
I couldn't hear. What resolution?
Why? It's audit of final payment for Matco Electric. Upgrades to the jail.
All right, so you're removing that from the agenda.
What was the reason?
Doesn't require going through the legislature. It only requires going through the committee.
Will Burbank.
And I would like to withdraw Resolution P.
Okay. Anything, any work left? I guess we do. Let's move to the consent agenda. There's some advisory board appointments. I'll read them. Out of the Health and Human Services Committee to the Human Rights Commission, Isabel Ramos and Anna Ortiz. Out of Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee to the Program Oversight Committee, Affordability Program, and the Housing Trust Program, Will Burbank. And we have some resolutions. If anyone wants them off the consent agenda, just say so. Resolution A, budget adjustment for Unity House Mental Health Department, ID 5500. Resolution B, budget adjustment for Lakeview Mental Health Department, ID 5499. Resolution C, budget adjustment for Racker Center Mental Health Department, ID number 5498. Resolution D, award of bid, CR 110, Ellis Hollow Road Construction, that's County Road, obviously, Phase 2, Town of Dryden, ID 5535. Economic Development Committee, Resolution F, award of Spring 2015 Community Celebrations Grants, ID 5502. Resolution G, Spring 2015 New Tourism Initiative Grant Awards, ID 5503. Resolution H, Spring 2015 Tourism Project Grant Awards, ID 5504. Resolution I, Spring 2015 Tourism Marketing and Advertising Grant Awards, ID 5505. Do I have a motion on the consent agenda? Kathy Luz Herrera, seconded by Peter Stein. All in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed, that's unanimous. Okay, let's go through our reports. We'll start with the Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee. Dooley Kiefer is the chair.
A brief report. We met on April 15th, and essentially, all of the work we did that day is reflected on tonight's agenda, with one exception. We heard a report on the Ag and Farmland Protection Plan, which is in draft form and soon to be adopted, I expect. If you're interested, you can find it online. There have been meetings off and on with various sectors of the community for the last couple of years to help develop this. So I don't have any further report. Our next meeting's agenda has not yet been set, so I can't tease you with any good things coming.
Any questions for Dooley? Dooley, you have some resolutions, please?
Yes. The first one is Resolution J, expressing concern over the lack of transparency, the possible fast-track designation, and the potential negative effects on environmental, health, labor, and local business concerns from the Trans-Pacific Partnership and urging defeat of fast-track. It's ID 5548.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dan Klein. Discussion. Julie?
Yes. I have agonized over details of this resolution since it first appeared in the agenda packet, which was in an unformed state. And in response to legislative staff's request for getting names of persons to whom to send copies of this resolution, I finally got down to see Karen today and gave her some specific ones, chairs of various congressional and Senate committees that are particularly relevant, and she's added them to a version which I have asked be sent to everyone. I don't know if everyone saw it ahead of time or not. It has changes throughout the resolution, and since I mistakenly moved what came out of committee instead of asking someone else to move it, I am in a quandary about how to get my suggested changes on the floor.
Does anyone else want to move that amendment? Carol?
I'll move it and speak to it if there's assuming
there's
a second.
Is there a second for the amendment?
Wait a minute.
I can second.
All right.
Well,
now on the amendment, if
Which one is the question?
Is it the one in the packet with the red you're talking about?
The one in the packet that has red markings on it that says proposed amendment by Legislator Kiefer in red.
Point of order, Mike.
Point of order.
You would have moved not when that stapled and came to us in the mail, but in our packets with no red, but a lot of changes as adopted by committee, correct?
That's what's on the floor.
That's what you moved in the first place. Okay. And you're moving the one with the red. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. That's what I believe is the amendment.
Yeah. I can speak.
Let's make sure.
I can speak to them both and what came out of committee, if you'd like.
All right, go ahead, Carol.
Okay, so at committee, what we had going into committee was what was also in our packets. But because of the timing, as it often is, we did work in committee on this, much of it brought to us by our illustrious chair, and much of which we adopted, and the committee really spent a lot of time on it. But some of the explanation, the three whereases in particular, what had originally been the third, fourth, and fifth whereases, the committee was not happy with, although our chair had brought it to us. And so we took those out and then made wording changes, as we often do. What was in your packets as adopted by committee is what came out of committee unanimously, I believe. And then Dooley, who wanted more explanation back in, we didn't think that there should be half a page of background explanation on some aspects of TPP and not the others, wrote what I think is a much better summary paragraph about the WTO and the process for making decisions there. And then the others are fairly minor, grammar and wording changes. She's right about the title over the lack of transparency, the possible fast track. We don't usually do that. We usually shorten that. to something more grammatically or less grammatically awkward. So I was in favor of all of these and thought they were in the spirit of what we did in committee. On the substance itself, you know, we've heard over the past month or two here at the legislature, and we certainly, if you've been paying any attention to the news, we've been hearing information about the TPP, the concerns from both sides of the aisle by some people about the ways in which it usurps authority of our nation and some of the laws that we pass to protect environment, labor, public health, and similar concerns at the state level and for us at the local level. And so I have big concerns about that. And I would have done something that even more, and I suggested in committee, and it, you know, my colleagues did, but didn't see fit to pass it, and I'm not going to move it here, that would have resolved further that we would not be in favor of similar such agreements. But what this mostly speaks to is the fast-track nature of this, that if our nation is going to talk about it, it certainly ought to have a full discussion of this, and that's been a bipartisan discussion. The one surprise, Victor Tiffany's been coming here, is he still here, for months talking to us about TPP, and I'd walk in and he would say, I'm going to surprise you and shock you and surprise you. And I wasn't surprised by any of it. I was surprised to hear in committee that he is a registered Republican.
Let's confine it to the amendment.
So it is a bipartisan, and whatever you think of the presentations we've heard from others, I hope that your knowledge of this and what we have in our packet is enough to garner your support for it.
On the amendment, Martha Robertson, then Kathy Luz Herrera.
I hate to do this, but I think there are a couple of corrections.
Uruguay is misspelled.
Uruguay is misspelled.
Oh, I thought it was right. Mm-hmm. I just Googled it.
I think the word concerns needs to stay in the title. I don't think it makes sense without concerns.
That's the second word of the title, expressing concern.
Yeah, but the potential negative effects on environmental health, labor, and local business, that doesn't make sense. You might, maybe, unless you say environment, health, labor, and local business.
I consider that friendly, environment.
That's a change that was supposed to be made. Yeah. Thank you.
Which?
AL out of environment.
So negative as an environment, health, labor, and local business. Okay, so AL comes out of environmental on the title. And then, Dooley, I'm not sure what on the top of the second page, should that be significantly expanded? Not expanded.
Yes, expanded. They're mostly spelling things.
This is not a
okay.
Karen's flying fingers.
Okay. And I want to say I really appreciate that new resolve about urging our own delegation to vote against Fast Track, and I appreciate having all those other names, although I'm sure the staff doesn't appreciate having to send it so many places. But on the whole, I think I'm not sure I'm crazy about the whole new whereas, but I'm okay. But I'd vote for this.
So those suggestions were taken as friendly by both the mover and the seconder of the amendment?
Yeah.
Okay. Then let's go to Kathy Luz Herrera.
Thank you. I have a question and then I have some comments. I read this and it seems equivalent, if not improved. So is there anyone on the committee that would have problems supporting this unanimously? And I'm talking about the proposed amendment. And if so, are there any reasons why? It seems to me that it's a no-brainer, but I just want to check and find out. And so if anyone does, you know, it would be great to hear from them. The other thing, and I'm just going to go on while I got the floor, and just talk about the principles expressed here. I couldn't support this any more than I do. You know, I still remember NAFTA, much as I loved President Clinton as a resident of Texas. I could see what was going to happen at the border, across the border, and in this country, not just with trucking, but all over the place. There's a problem when you have private negotiations, and it makes me think about how we make decisions.
here on a local level, sometimes we talk about, as legislators, how if you negotiate publicly, it makes it so much harder because so many people have input and it reveals negotiating strategies and it makes it harder to come to agreement. I understand that argument, and I've experienced it personally many times, and I can see how people at the federal level would use that as an excuse to give fast-track authority to the president. But I don't think it's right. I don't think it's right to negotiate in private, necessarily. I don't think that that lack of transparency is helpful for us, and it's, I think, important for us to think about the implications of what we're asking the federal government to do. And this, for me, is part of my philosophical approach to government, how many times we excoriate the federal government for doing things that we've adopted ourselves as business as usual. So I want to say that. The second thing I want to do is talk a little bit about tariffs and how, at the time of NAFTA and now, many free trade advocates are talking about how tariffs can be harmful to not just the global economy but the local economy. And I want to speak not just as a labor advocate but as a health and human services and public safety advocate about an example of where tariffs were defeated, and that is sheetrock. We got sheetrock imported from China. It was actually dumped on us, and that sheetrock had bad stuff in it. I'm trying to remember right now what was in it. Was it asbestos? Yeah, it was formaldehyde. And people got to put in a lot of housing that was created under federal subsidies because it was so cheap. Well, you know, cheaper isn't always better, and it was harmful. The dumping that goes on isn't confined just to sheetrock. Another one that I talk about frequently here that we're not doing so much now is solar panels. For a time, China had subsidized its solar panels and was, in effect, dumping them here. And it was because they wanted to, you know, corner the market. Fortunately, we're manufacturing them here more than we were. They still tend to be a little more expensive. They provide local jobs and more, well, not more importantly, as important, they also stimulate creativity and innovation in the industry. So anytime we accept something that's being dumped by another country and that we say that tariffs are always bad, what we're doing is maybe having limited thinking about what's really important in local economy and local businesses. The last thing I want to say is that it may or may not surprise people. It does me, as a labor advocate, that labor is virtually unified in opposing this. And the reason for that is that it takes away any local autonomy. Any local autonomy for local governments. Okay, I'm from Texas. Y'all make fun of the fact that, you know, we still want to retain the right to secede, even though it hasn't been in our Constitution for years. But local autonomy is something that is in our blood as Americans. We want to retain that. This totally would destroy it. And, yeah, I'm talking about the amendment because it's, in effect, the resolution. I couldn't support this anymore. The wording changes on it, I think, were clarifying. And I really hope we can get through, because I don't care who's president. I don't think that fast-track authority should be given to anyone. It's very, very corrosive, and it'll be destructive, not just of our democracy, of our economy, of our health and safety. And I hope they listen to us. And, of course, I'll be voting in support of this tonight.
Thank you, Kathy. I've got Jim, then Peter, and then could we vote on the amendment, please? This is on the amendment, Jim.
No. I will speak on the main motion.
All right. Peter?
I, too, would like to speak on the main motion.
All right. Are we ready to vote on the amendment? All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. On the main motion, we're back to that. Anyone else want to speak? Jim?
Thank you. I'm going to remind everyone of our friend Brian, who was here the other day. He would look around the room, and if he's watching, I'm sorry that I'm going to paraphrase him. But why are we voting on this? Because it's not something that we really have control over, and I don't really like voting on those kinds of resolutions. And he would say that, and sometimes I would agree and sometimes I wouldn't agree. But in this case, I think that it makes some sense. And frankly, I'm not conversant with the 1986-1994 Uruguay round of GATT negotiations, but I'm guessing that a yes vote is going to be viewed as sent to some elected official higher than me that we are against this thing. And I'm really having a hard time deciding, not deciding, but should I support something like this? But the people who've showed up here, and they actually inspired me to try to find out something about it. And I did. And it looks like it would be a pretty negative thing. But I'm also reminded by Kathy about NAFTA in those days and all the things that meant. So I'm going to support this, but in the long run, these kinds of things really just kind of don't make me feel very good about some of the things we have to do on these issues, because it's a yes or no vote, and nobody cares what I say, and nobody cares what a lot of us say. So I'll vote yes and to just move along.
Peter Stein, then Martha Robertson.
Yeah, well, I agree with a lot of what Jim said, but not all of it. I'm not very happy voting on these resolutions that I don't understand. And mostly they're not this complicated, but this is an extremely complicated issue, and it's very, very hard to understand it. And in circumstances where I don't know what I'm voting on, I'm not very happy about that. And I actually find that one of the more difficult things about spending 5 years here is having to vote on things that I don't really understand. I mean, today I had a good experience. When I heard something by the fire commissioner, all of a sudden I understood what I was going to do about the sparklers. I voted for the sparklers before, and when I heard someone that I know and respect say it was a bad thing, that changed my vote. But with this situation, it's really complicated, and I'm going to vote no, and I really am not trying to convince anybody, because I'm sure I won't, but I really want to talk to my constituents and explain why I'm voting no on such a disgraceful, apparently disgraceful decision that's been made in Washington. So I'm afraid it's going to take me a little longer than I would like. But in the first place, I don't know a whole lot about trade treaties. But I know a little bit about treaties, and there are a couple of treaties having to do with arms control that I knew in great detail how they were processed. And I think that one of the things that I learned there is transferable to this situation, namely that particularly when you have an agreement that is made between several countries, and those countries are all sovereign countries, and it's negotiated in secret by those countries who have different points of view, and then after a long time, they come to an agreement on what to do. And they all vote for it, okay? I mean, they say, this is our treaty. This is the treaty that the five of us or the eight of us have decided to pass. And then one country says, well, okay, that's all right, but we're actually going to change it by ourselves. Doesn't matter that all the other countries have negotiated, and we're going to make our own changes. And that's what we're going to vote on. Now, in a situation like that, in the good old days, if it was the U.S. that was making those decisions, that'd be okay, because pretty much the U.S. ran everything around the world. But that's no longer the case. And I think that trying to defeat the fast track is a way of sounding good, saying to the president, we want to be part of this negotiation, when the real reason is to defeat the treaty that our president and the people that work in this particular area for him have negotiated with eight other cases. I don't think that the argument for the fast track itself, namely don't do things in secret, makes any sense whatsoever. Certain things have to be done in secret, and this is a cheap way of undercutting the president. That's got nothing to say about whether it's a good treaty or not. So I think that the whole fast track argument is essentially a political fake. Now, the treaty itself, there's a couple of things I read. You know, I only learned about this, I don't know, what, a couple of months or so ago? I'd never heard of it. And when I heard, good God, what are we doing? We're giving up all our rights to some mysterious organization? This whole thing doesn't make any sense. Why are we doing this? And what I was told by the people who feel strongly about it was that we were just giving up all our rights to some strange international court. Well, the more I thought about it, I tried to find something to read. And I found a couple of things to read that I thought did not have that fiery tone in the voice. One was an article that was in the Washington Post called All You Need to Know About the Fast Track. I put that in all of your envelopes, which I found extremely interesting. And the other was a couple of articles that I read in the New York Times. Now, there's only three things I read. I read the Washington Post, the New York Times, and the New York Review of Books. Everything I know comes from one of those three things. And I have a lot of respect for each of those publications. I don't always agree with them, but I think they make an honest attempt to do it. And when you read what the Washington Post had to say about this, it doesn't sound anything like what I've been hearing from Victor Tiffany and a whole lot of other people. I mean, in fact, it's always true that when you have a treaty and there becomes an argument between two countries, it has to be decided by some other body. I actually, by the way, had a friend who litigated a dispute between Japan and the U.S. about the sale of rice. And there was a treaty that had been done by Japan and U.S. where Japan, the U.S. said Japan had to open itself up to the sale of rice from the U.S. And they couldn't make arguments of a certain sort. And the only argument they could make was an argument that the rice was not safe or something like that. And then my friend litigated something where they went to an international court and argued how many rat hairs per kilo were there to be allowed in the rice before it was dangerous to eat. And that's what they were doing. So this notion of having some international court make a decision for your own country about importing rice is just a part of trade treaties. It's got to be that way. How else would you do it? So I believe that these arguments are grossly exaggerated. And for that reason, A, I don't think we should vote for the fast track, because I think it completely destroys it. And secondly, when we vote for it, for other reasons, I think it's a good thing to pass. But I won't get on to that because we're not talking about the other reasons today.
Okay, we've got other business tonight. I'm going to ask people to try to be a little crisper in their comments. We want to not... I realize these kind of resolutions draw passions, and people want to have their feelings known about them. But I'm going to move next to Will Burbank.
I think Martha was next.
I'm sorry. Martha is next. Then Will Burbank, then Kathy Luz Herrera.
Peter, it is really important for us as legislators to educate ourselves on this particular issue. I agree. We can't know everything about everything. This one really matters, and it absolutely has a place in local government because there are so many ramifications of this. And I don't disagree that opposing fast track is a way to scuttle the treaty. That's fine with me. I understand the I understand that only one person or one entity can negotiate a treaty. That's why I support the president doing what he's doing with Iran. But what's disturbing about TPP is that it's not that the values seem to be entirely corporate, transnational, nothing to do with the values that we have as a country, with what we stand for as a country. And I sent you earlier today the, you don't have to take my word for it, Eric Schneiderman, the Attorney General of the state of New York, had an op-ed, and you know, this is one provision, and the thing that Victor has talked about the most, this ISDS, Investor State Dispute System, so that a foreign corporation could sue us because they didn't like our fracking ban. They could sue the state of New York because they didn't like something they were doing. They could sue the federal government because of environmental or wage or human rights laws. Any and all of things, you can shrug your shoulders, but any and all of these things are possible and likely. One provision, Eric Schneiderman writes, one provision of TPP would create an entirely separate system of justice, special tribunals, to hear and decide claims by foreign investors that their corporate interests are being harmed by a nation that is part of the agreement. This would allow large multinational corporations to sue a signatory country for actions taken by its federal, state, or local elected or appointed officials that the foreign corporation claims hurt its bottom line, and not just current, but future. So, like, if they think perhaps in the future something we did would cost it money, we would not be allowed to do it. And so I think that the public has been raising the alarm on this correctly. The media has, the reason people don't know about it is the media has been virtually silent. And do I understand why the president is doing this? Hell no. I like a lot of the things that he's done. I support many of them and things that he's, and I agree with you that the Congress usually attacks him just to undermine his positions. It is interesting that the opposition is coming from the Democratic Party and not from the Republicans, who usually like to undermine him. Now, I have to say, this is a critical issue. It's time sensitive. I especially like, as I said, Dooley's addition, asking our two senators and congressional representative specifically, directly, vote against fast track. That's coming up very, very shortly. It's time sensitive and it's urgent. We have absolutely correct standing to take this position, and I certainly hope it passes with a large vote today.
Will Burbank.
Thank you, Mike. This is a critically important measure, and it is important that this body pass something precisely for the reasons that Martha was talking about. Most of America doesn't know this is happening because it has not been widely reported. I thank Victor for coming back and speaking articulately. I'd been reading about this for several years. I couldn't honestly believe what I was hearing initially. Yes, I'm opposed in general to the treaty, but the process of fast track is bizarre. You have a situation where what we know about it is based on leaks of tiny little portions of a very large document. U.S. senators who would like to know and understand what's in that document are not permitted at this point to get copies. They, in order to see what's in the document, they literally have to go into a locked room, read it under the watchful eyes of an attendant. They are not allowed to take any notes, and that's it. And so, it's not unreasonable for us to fear the worst, but it's certainly prudent for us to call upon full and prolonged discussion in Congress if we are going to go this route. The reason we need to act is because I think in this particular case we have the ability to affect a conversation. We could when we started looking around for models in which to that we could might have a resolution, and Google the word counties in opposition to fast track or TPP, Google came up empty. We literally might be the first in the country. I hope that's not the case, but the city of Seattle, the city of Los Angeles have done it, and I want to thank Dan for looking at those and making and getting something in motion to Dooley's committee. At any rate, I am very thankful that we're doing this, and I hope that we get a strong vote.
Kathy, wrap us up, then let's vote, please.
Okay.
Dooley, I'll take you.
I don't think there's any mind-changing going to go on at this time. I just want to talk to people, working people. I know you all have lived through this just like I have. I'm guessing since 1986 you've seen your effective wages drop by 30%. I believe there's a reason for that, and I've kept myself well informed about it. Look, I'm just the daughter of a jailhouse lawyer, and I read everything I can get my hands on. I read trade journals, copyright law. I read Forbes, National Review. I read Texas Monthly, the San Francisco Chronicle. I read everything I can get my hands on, and what I believe has happened across this country is that working people have lost the war, and the war has been to get us to be so busy earning a living that we have less energy to speak up. And certainly I've seen on the legislature a tendency to have so much work on us that we have little time to have private lives, much less have one or two jobs. This is relevant, y'all. It has to do with democracy. And I can myself come up with a reason why Obama is doing this. Democrats as a whole are really shy of being tagged as anti-business, particularly in the last 20 years. What I term neo-corporate Democrats are very careful to be supportive of business. But this fast-track law, and I don't just mean giving the president the right to negotiate, but I mean the entire process and the entire treaty, it's anti-environment. You know, when people talk about passions, part of what they're doing is saying this isn't rational. What you're doing is so full of emotion that, therefore, it can't be rational. But, you know, when people get excited about the environment, about, oh, the water in their homes being able to be torched by fire, that's rational. And it is rational to be inspired by this enough to take a stance and to come up not with just emotional, but also data-driven arguments. And the data-driven arguments on this are also labor arguments. The fact that the race to the bottom is not complete. People, and I mean uneducated people, people that don't have college degrees, are going to continue to see their wage drop. And, okay, maybe somebody that's a professor at a university might not notice that much more of their expendable income going away, and so they might not be studying up on this the way working people who can read and who have time are. But I can tell you this, that it also has to do with agriculture. It has to do with economic development. Imagine not being able to have zoning and density laws the way that we want them. Am I being alarmist? Well, some interpretations of this, and some people here understand because we've been reading. Better Cities and Towns is a local journal on smart development and urban renewal. And this can have implications that are far more than local. They're personal. They hit us in the pocketbook. They affect our children. They affect the environment. I really do not want this treaty to pass. If I'm being seen as against this, that's okay. I was against NAFTA, and for all the good it did me, yeah, you can call me an anti-business Democrat only because I don't like multinational corporations running my government.
Dooley, and then please let's vote. I don't seem to be getting through about being crisp.
I was crisp. You should have heard the words I had written down.
But please be short. Thank you.
Peter, it's really discouraging to hear an intelligent colleague like you say you can't educate yourself on something like this, which so many folks have recognized as an incredibly important thing. The jobs that we have lost that have gone overseas are a direct result of earlier trade agreements. And I'm only sorry that I didn't hear Amanda's Shafta until tonight. I would love to have had that in this resolution somewhere. Anyway, I hope you all can support this. And I hope you will reconsider, Peter.
Carol, last time.
Yeah, I'll be short. I just want to add to the list of reasons that have been eloquently given here is defending small business and our economic way of life. We are dedicated at all levels in this country, supposedly national, although I'm not sure anymore, state and local, to ensure a level playing field. And at the local level, more than anywhere else, small business is affected by what we do. And this is going to decimate small business because large corporations that have access to these courts, this court and these regulations are going to be able to, even more than they do now, shut out local business and smaller scale business. I can also go into more progressive reasons related to labor. I will just say for all these trade agreements, we've essentially said that we are going to allow capital to move across borders, but not labor. For local business, that's not as much of an issue, but for local business reasons alone, we should be supporting this. So I hope that we can do this in a bipartisan way.
All right. We're going to go ahead to vote on the resolution as amended. And all those in favor of the resolution.
Can we have a roll call vote on this, please?
Certainly may. The clerk will call the roll, please.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
No.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chuck?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Does anyone want to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
12 ayes, 1 no.
That resolution passes. Thank you. Dooley, you have Resolution K next?
Sure. Resolution K is document 5544, acceptance of grant from the Park Foundation for the Solarize Tompkins / Renewable Heating and Building Efficiency Program. And it says parenthesis, reheat Tompkins, end paren.
Is there a second? Seconded by Leslin. Discussion? Kathy Luz Herrera.
Source of the solar panels. Do we know?
They're not solar. They're heat.
No.
Efficiency. I think they have not picked a contractor yet.
Can we personally, as many of us as possible, urge them to source nationally, locally, and using local labor if possible, just phone calls? I'm telling you, this is important. And I understand it's not just solar panels.
Carol?
Yeah, I will say, first I want to thank the committee that has worked on these. They have spent years now, first on their pilot program in the three towns, and then bringing it with great debate and hours and hours and days of interviews of contractors and agonizing about how do they keep the price down while making sure that they do respond to the concerns about local businesses and contractors. So I know that the committee is aware of that as an issue. Certainly, maybe, Ed, you can pass it along to them, the concern that we continue to encourage them to look in those directions, but I think they do. And I just want to thank them because this is done primarily by volunteers and who have been tireless. So thank you.
Will?
Second to what Carol said, and if I'm reading this correctly, this has the potential for maybe getting in place a program that will be of use to those of us who wanted to do the solar, but when we looked in the possibility, we just didn't have the right site. But we might be able to have a heat pump system that could work. And so I hope this gets off the ground. And, wow, I am thrilled every time I go around town and see all the new solar panels that are in our community now that weren't there a year ago. And and Renovus that's going great guns in terms of local business. So let's keep it going.
Martha?
And I want to thank, I know it's in the title, but thank the Park Foundation for this very generous grant, which I understand is a one-year allocation with, you know, if things go well, and encouragement to reapply.
Yes, this is in the nature of a pilot here. Kathy, Liz, I think I am correct in saying that many of the folks who are the volunteers who make this program happen are very well aware of the importance of having equipment manufactured as locally as possible.
Thank you.
Yes.
Ready to vote.
And there's one thing in the title which I would like to suggest be struck, and that is the parenthesis that says reheat Tompkins. If you read the first whereas, it says that that's a tentative title, and I don't think those words should be in our resolution title.
Is there any objection? Ready
Can
to vote.
Can I ask if they have a name yet that we could put in here?
Yes. For the initiative, it's going to be Heat Smart Tompkins, not Reheat. We decided that sounded too much like
leftovers. Can you identify yourself for the group?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm Jonathan Comstock. I'm the chair of the board at Solar Tompkins.
Thank you, Jonathan.
So should we amend this? Should we amend this to give the – that's a done deal title or
– So I, that is the correct title for what the initiative will be. What is there is the title that is the title of the proposal that went into the Park Foundation. So I'm not – since you're
okay,
voting
we'll
to accept the
it.
Park Foundation, I don't – you know, whatever is more clear for you is fine.
Julie, what do you want to do?
I think that Reheat Tompkins should come out of the title. And if that's the way it went into the Park Foundation, I feel more comfortable leaving that. And when it's successful and we go for another year, we'll have the real title.
And just so that you know, when you hear about Heat Smart Tompkins, it's the same thing. That's what it will be publicized as.
So could that information be in our minutes, please?
Okay. Ready to vote? All those in favor?
Was that friendly to the...
I asked if there's any objection. Didn't hear any.
Okay.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Duly, Resolution L.
Resolution L, ID 5524, adoption of Local Law C of 2015, a local law governing the sale, application, and disposal of waste associated with oil and natural gas exploration, extraction, and storage activities. I move it.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dan. Discussion?
It's very appropriate for Dan to second it since he did the heavy lifting on this. I have something that I would like to ask Jonathan about. It's not addressed in the local law, and it doesn't need to be. But it's how on earth this can be enforced. Very often after laws are passed, some body adopts regulations or develops procedures, and it's not at all clear to me how this can be enforced. So if Jonathan has any light to shed, that would be great.
John?
Sure. I don't have a lot, and it is very difficult to enforce no matter who does it or no matter what rules you have, because when people are, say, dumping material, they very rarely have a bucket which says old fracking waste. You know? So, I mean, it's very difficult to determine what material is. I will still talk with a few other counties like Westchester, which has had it for a long time, and see how they've done it. We'll establish something, but Dooley's right. I mean, it is going to be very difficult to enforce.
It struck me that people might go to the sheriff, and he should be forewarned.
Yeah, and I will speak with the sheriff and the sheriff's department about it. Again, I'm sure the sheriff would be inclined to tell you that he's no expert in identifying fracking materials, and there will have to be some I don't know if education is the word, but we'll have to figure out what the best way to enforce it is. But, of course, it does present challenges.
Martha?
Well, it seems to me the things like our prohibition on open burning operate by complaints. So if somebody notices something, they can make a complaint.
But, for example, the open burning is part of the county sanitary code, right, which is enforced by the health department, which has procedures to do that. And it is done largely by complaint. And this would probably be done largely by complaint, but who would be the appropriate agency to deal with it, et cetera? You know, the health department, too, right, would say, well, we're not particularly experts. It's not in our sanitary code. We don't know a lot about fracking waste or identifying it, et cetera. So it presents challenges.
Well, the thing like, for example, placing or spreading waste on any road, you know, citizens by themselves don't do road treatments. So that's something where there's always an official chain of command or whatever, so that if there's, at least there's, I'm glad this is here. I'm glad it's for any road, and I hope we'll pass it and figure out how to enforce it.
All right, ready to vote? All those in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Resolution M, Dooley?
Resolution M, ID 5494. Amendment of the 2015 Tompkins County budget to reflect the 2015-2016 budgets for the Ithaca-Tompkins County Transportation Council and authorization to implement the amendment. I move it.
Is there a second? Seconded by Kathy Lou Herrera. Discussion? Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. It's 7:30. Let's take 10 minutes, be back at 20 minutes of 8, and let's finish up the agenda. Folks, let's get going again. Back to our order of committees. Charter Review Committee has not met since our last meeting. We will meet again on February 6th at 3 o'clock and take up some more sections of the charter. Any questions I can answer? Let's go to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee.
Thank you very much. Obviously, the county administrator already gave you the heads up on the retreat, which is 5:30 April 27th at TCAT. The regularly scheduled budget capital meeting will not be held next week on the 27th because we're going to be down there at 5:30. Anything we have to do, we will do. BCP committee will meet prior to the May 5th legislature meeting if we have to do those kinds of things. So, that concludes my report.
Questions, Martha?
Do you need money for food for the retreat?
The county administrator usually buys dinner, and I would remind you, at the meeting that it would be nice to put some money in the bowl, the collection plate, when it's
ethics
time.
Ethics reform. So.
Although if you accept my recommended budget, we can make a little deal on the pizza side.
I mean, when I say he buys it, it's his credit card. It's not the county credit card.
So it's not a line on the budget.
No.
Yeah, right. It's not a line. One other thing. We have a meeting coming up with TC3. All of you have received a letter, I believe, in the mail today about coming to a meeting with the TC3 president and his staff. The county legislators in Cortland County and us.
An email, Jim, or a
no, no. TC3 mailed it. It's about their budget and the two counties meeting over at TC3. And the chair of the legislature here, Mike gave us a Cortland Standard headline, which says, legislators asked the chair of the board in Cortland County to step down. So what I'm saying this for is, this could be one of the top five meetings of the year. So please attend when the Cortland County legislators are here with us and the president of TC3, because I have read, because Mike has given this to us, that the Cortland County legislature is in a real pickle in terms of money, and they want to probably not make a very large contribution to the community college in the future. So that could be a problem.
Questions for Jim?
I didn't get the letter. When's the meeting for the budget?
March. I think May 15th, but I don't have a copy of the letter with me.
It's May 15th at noon.
There it is, May 15th.
Thank you.
11:45 if you want food.
Yeah. Did you say the meeting, the budget committee?
11:45 if you want food.
No, no. I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
I'm sorry, did you say the budget committee meeting on the 27th was canceled?
Yes, okay. Because we're going to be at the retreat at 5:30.
Okay.
All right, anything else? Thank you, Jim. The old library committee, we've set up some dates now for the presentations by the three proposers for the redevelopment of the old library site. We will have a meeting of the committee on April 30th at 9 a.m. We'll be strategizing how we will be going through the presentations and questions we'll be asking of the people who will be coming. And then we're going to have three evening meetings at 5 o'clock p.m., all three, on May 1st, on May 8th, and on May 12th. And they'll all be here in this room, and we'll be hearing those presentations. They will be open to the public. The actual proposal should be on the website here within a few days. That's the word today we have on that. If you have questions, I'm glad to answer them. Kathy?
I won't be able to attend the May 8th meeting, and I wondered if there were other legislators that couldn't attend that meeting, members of the committee, because I know that we try to...
We really worked on dates to try to get everybody. We are hoping to be able to tape it and stream it so that if someone's not able to come, they can look at that particular meeting.
Well, I just want to make it clear that I made every effort to attend.
I know you did,
because
Kathy.
Because I get criticized for not making stuff, and when it's scheduled for a time I can't make it, I want people to know ahead of time.
I understand.
Mike?
Kathy, or Carol?
So we had a lot of people in talking to us at both the committee meeting and the legislature meeting in the first round about in support of condo development in Tompkins County. And then we didn't end up getting a proposal from that developer, and none of the three are condo
development. No, that's not true.
One of the three is the condo developer?
Yeah. Not
there's
that
a few
condo.
Condos, right?
The one that wants to redevelop the old library building without demolishing it is talking about a proposal for some condominiums.
But they wouldn't be owner-owned, would they?
Well, that's what condominiums are.
And that's if the property is leased or if the property is owned?
A condominium means that the occupant owns it.
Okay.
And so I think I still had the floor. So do we know, have we heard anything about whether the developer who had all that support and people wanting to buy their particular style of condos might be looking at already arranged to have other property?
We have not had any feedback directly from him.
No feedback at all?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, can we move on to the Public Safety Committee? Nathan Shinagawa.
Yes, the Public Safety Committee met yesterday and had a, as usual, very eventful meeting. And so I don't have any action today, but I can update the committee on a number of items. And actually, let me pull up my agenda here first. So the first thing that we did is we accepted the sheriff's report, which was just merely just acknowledging the receipt of the report, and then related to Hornbrook Road. And then we talked about next steps. And so the committee had a very lengthy discussion about what to do next. And we concluded on, after learning about this resource from Paula Younger, our deputy county administrator, we decided that we were going to first reach out to the Department of Justice, who has a bureau that is specifically there for technical assistance. So what that means is that they have law enforcement experts. And not just law enforcement. They look at the. She believes that they have experts that can look at, you know, other aspects of it beyond just the law enforcement, like, you know, the treatment as it relates to the events that took place prior to it. So everything, including, you know, the court interactions he had, the DUI, how he handled him, serving warrants, et cetera. So so they have those experts. And so what we've asked is that we pursue getting technical assistance so we can have experts review what happened, you know, look at the appropriateness and the proportionality of the total response that we had, and then provide us recommendations on how we can better handle a situation like this in the future. Now, if we find that the technical assistance inquiry leads to them delaying, you know, or taking a very long time for us to make this happen, we also will then have a fallback option of drafting an RFP that we'll submit to experts to see if we can get a law enforcement expert to look at it in an independent way that we can bring on. So that's what we talked about. Any questions about that?
Nathan, was there any discussion about what something like that might cost the county?
No, we do not know what it would cost. And obviously, with a request for proposals, I'm sure we'll get a very large range. But that is why it is absolutely important to have a very defined scope. And so, you know, consultants, they see an open scope and they see that can make the range quite large. And so we really need to keep it tight. So the committee did give authority for the county administrator and I to work on that RFP, and we'll also share that with committee members as we are working.
Jim Dennis.
Nathan said the committee gave him and Joe the authority to do that. I voted against that, and there are two parts of the way the discussion went, and I think Nate illustrated it very well. They were talking about, Nathan brought up about doing an RFP to bring someone in to do some of the things that he talked about. In the middle of the meeting, Paul raised her hand and started talking about the DOJ potential, where they would come in, paid for by federal taxpayer dollars, and we would not have to pay for, you know, we would not have to buy an RFP to have them come in. And if they could not come in or did not want to or couldn't assist us, then the RFP route would be taken. The first part of it, I would support. The second part of it, I would not support. And I don't know. Mike asked a good question, how much would it cost? I have no idea, and none of us do at this point. But had the reference in, I don't know, we didn't really have a resolution. We kind of moved something. And I would certainly support the DOJ coming in and looking, but we really want to pay for it. And I gave way too many reasons why I wouldn't want to do that yesterday. So I kind of wanted everyone to know where I was on that.
Dan Klein.
Do we know if either of those options require it to come to the full legislature?
I believe that if it were to go be an RFP, we would need money out of contingency fund to do that, so it would go to the legislature. The response in terms of the technical assistance review, I don't believe it has to, but...
don't think it has to. It could be as a courtesy to the legislature would come forward for.
Yeah. And the, if it was an RFP, obviously if we're spending money, it would have to come to us, but it would be, it wouldn't be until that point. Would that be the probable path of things?
Right, yeah. So we are going to work on that RFP within the committee.
Yeah. Thank you.
Kathy.
I would agree with some members who have spoken that it would be, well, I don't know if they exactly said this, so I want to exactly say it. I'd like for decisions about this to come to the full legislature, whether it comes out of contingency or whether it's an RFP. And from what I heard, it sounded as though there was a potential option offered that might not involve spending the money. Was there a reason that that was not investigated? And I'm just wondering if it involved the potential for having the Department of Justice come in, was that not investigated?
That's what we're doing. That's what we're doing.
So what I heard from Jim was something about not having to spend the money. Maybe I misunderstood.
So what it is that we're first going to the Department of Justice to get technical assistance. That's the one that wouldn't cost any money. But it will take 6 to 8 weeks for us to get an answer on that, just that part alone. And then subject to how much federal funding they have, they may add us to the queue, they may not. And then there is a decision point for us, which is, do we wait or do we develop an RFP and bring in somebody on our own? And I don't think we're going to make that decision until we find out from the Department of Justice whether or not they'll even do it. And that will take 6 to 8 weeks.
So just one more clarifying question.
Kathy still has the floor.
It sounds as though we won't be asking staff to work on developing an RFP until we've heard back from the Department of
Justice.
Well,
we still have to have some specifics of what we're going to ask the Department of Justice to look at. So that's why I think that initial work of the scope, it will require some staff time and my time to work on that, and also the committee. Because what we're going to ask the Department of Justice for assistance on is likely very similar to what we're going to ask the recipients of the RFP to look over.
Peter, then Carol.
Okay.
Me?
Yes, Peter.
Is this the New York or the federal DOJ?
Federal DOJ.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that sounds really good.
Carol?
Yeah, I think that the nature of the discussion at the committee was what kinds of things would be in the scope of work, and the reason that the idea hadn't been investigated first was that it came out of the discussion, was this idea that, oh, that might be one possible source. So it will be investigated now. I think that's the answer to the question that was being asked.
Yeah. All right. So, I think Dooley has her hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dooley, didn't see you. Go ahead.
Thanks. The whatever the scope of your request to DOJ, I think it would be good for all the legislators to see it before it goes in. And so I don't know if that's what Kathy was saying, but that's how I feel. So I hope that's possible. I had a different question for you. There has been continuing concerns from Danby officials that the official Danby questions haven't been answered. Have you figured out a way to deal with that?
Yes. So I think the problem is that we had set aside time in the March meeting to answer many of those questions during the meeting. But as many of you know, that meeting went quite long and we did not get to it. So I talked to the undersheriff, and the undersheriff would like to invite the Danby officials, would like to have a meeting with the Danby officials and Legislator Klein to actually go through those questions and make sure that they're adequately answered.
So it would be, it wouldn't be in writing. It would be in a meeting.
We'd like to do a meeting. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Nathan.
All right. And other issues on public safety, we did talk about body cameras. You'll recall that I said that the body camera policy would come in April. It is not completed yet, but for very good reason. We are very much in alignment with the city of Ithaca, and the city attorney, Ari Levine, has been working on that policy, and I think that so far people are very impressed and happy with what he's been able to put together. It still has to be seen by many key stakeholders, so it is being worked on, and hopefully we'll have something by next month that we'll be able to share. And What's also nice is that while this policy is being developed, we have received back the responses from our RFP related to the technology itself. And in fact, the Sheriff's Office and the IPD is actively testing equipment from those RFPs. And I believe that they have some alignment on the provider that they want to use. And so so that's very promising. So even though the policy discussion or the policy review is pushed back a month, actually the technology is moving faster. So we believe that those things working in parallel fashion will still allow for body cameras to be implemented by the end of this year. Not a trial, but actual full implementation of it, and possibly even sooner than that. Other than that, any questions on body cameras? Okay. Other than that, we had a discussion from the Let's Committee about what they're going to be working on over the next year. Then also the County Administrator did a review of the Operational Plan Critical Incident Response, which was something that they had been working on prior to Hornbrook Road. But then since Hornbrook Road was really the impetus for that to be further developed, and that is really just a very clear communication protocol when we have one of these critical incidences to make sure that all the key stakeholders are communicated with. Like, for example, in Hornbrook Road, it was identified that, you know, the town supervisor was not notified in a adequate amount of time. And so this critical incident response protocol will allow for us to make sure that we're checking all those boxes of the key stakeholders.
Les.
Nathan, I'm sorry. I want to go back to body cameras for a second. Do you recall if part of the discussion around body cameras also included dash cameras as well for the vehicles?
No, I believe it is focused on body cameras at the moment.
Okay. At your next meeting, or if the opportunity comes up that you can ask.
I'd be happy to do.
Because I think those things were sort of in tangent with each other and make for a better accountability. Yeah. So that might be something to ask.
I have a feeling that once they work through this the policy questions, but also the right use of technology, that kind of discussion is going to be, much faster than this initial one. Because really they have to figure out the policy of when to record and how people access the information, and not only how, but whether or not they're justified to do so, and under what circumstances. So there's a lot of policy questions. But then the technology is really key, too, because this stuff has to be held in secure record-keeping facilities and also have to be held for a certain amount of time, and there has to be guarantees that it will actually work. And so that technology is pretty complicated. But I think once it's worked through, that'll be easier. But I will definitely ask about it.
Yeah, I bring it up because I think probably the same policy would apply to dash cameras as well. And so if we're going to do it, we should do it all together. I mean, given the atmosphere of what we're seeing on the news, I think it really should those two people.
Yeah, and just to also provide some thank you. Yes, I will definitely do that. Also, it just reminded me that the city is going to be working on this agreement with the company that the sheriff and the police and the IPD are interested in. And the way it's going to work is that it's the initial negotiation will probably be with the IPD, and then they're going to have clauses that are going to allow for not only the county but then other entities. Let's say the Cayuga Police, the Cayuga Police. Right, or other areas that want to increase, that also want to jump on board, the provision will allow for us to be able to do that within that contract. And so I think, that mentality of just kind of working on this and then leaving the door open so we could bring on new areas is the right one for this technology.
Okay. John, Nathan? I've got some more questions. I guess Dooley.
You said there is now a critical incident response protocol?
Yes.
Could you share that with us?
Yes. The county administrator drafted it, and I'm sure he can forward it on.
Well, it's in your agenda. It's in your packet. So it's in the public service packet. So if you'd like to download that, it's available online. So it's in yesterday's agenda packet.
I will give you my copy, Dooley, right now.
That's fine.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Thank you, Nathan.
All right. Thank you.
thorough report. Let's go to Leslyn McBean Claiborne for the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. WDIC will meet tomorrow at 3:30. But I do have a couple of really quick announcements. One is May 20th is the Diversity Consortium Roundtable of Tompkins County Roundtable. That is their biannual conference. And so I encourage you all to attend. It's worthwhile. You know, aside from a main guest speaker, there are also many workshops that deal with the issues of diversity and inclusion. And we certainly support that happening in our county. We are a member of the Diversity Consortium of Tompkins County. As a matter of fact, we're one of the founding members, and we're still there. So that is happening. I said two, but I lied. It's just that one.
Okay. Questions? Thank you, Leslie. Let's go to Peter Stein in the Health and Human Services Committee.
We haven't met since the last legislature meeting, and if all goes well, we'll meet at the usual time, the first Thursday of the month.
Questions? Martha?
Yeah, Peter, there were a number of resolutions on consent about funding for mental health agencies, and there were some really big numbers. That was all passed through money. Am I right? That's state money that we just accept and pass on? Joe's nodding.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Anything else for Peter? Thanks, Peter. Dave McKenna, Facilities and Infrastructure Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. F and I met on Monday, April 13th. We received updates on facilities restoration, capital projects, the human services building and alterations project, and the public safety improvement project from Morrell. And we handled about four different resolutions. One we spoke about earlier, the audit for final payment for Matco Electric for public safety building fire alarm upgrades. We had a couple of folks from various unions, Plumbers Union and IBEC, to talk to us about the proposed changes to the local law 240, which is basically your scaffolding law. And at the end of the discussion, there was no vote to move that forward, so we dropped it. There was another resolution for terminal pay from the contingent fund for retiring highway division person. That was approved, and he awarded a bid, which was on the consent agenda for Ellis Hollow Road. And we also authorized the Highway Department to seek construction bids for the Groton City Road Bridge over Fall Creek. And along with that, we various quarterly summaries and capital payment summaries, highway, various capital construction maps for the Highway Department. And we reviewed those things. That's about it. That's my report.
Will?
Question, Dave. What is the status of the jail project? Where does that...
Jail project is, as I understand, is on time. It's actually ahead of time by, I think you said a month, didn't you, Joe?
I'm not sure if the jail is ahead by a month. The human services building is ahead by a month.
Right.
We are on track to, I think, have everything done by the end of this year, Will. We needed to go back to the state for the last round of its approvals because the design was slightly modified. You recall it went from a three-sided building to a four. So they wanted one last look at that. We took it back. So we've now gone through that. I think the bids are about to go out, but I do believe that the project is to be completed by the end of this year.
Okay. Thank you.
Dave, I think it would be really helpful if we could have a presentation to the legislature, perhaps by Arel Lamaro, about the status of the various projects that we have, for example, the jail, the mental health building, human services addition, those kinds of things. I think it's something that the legislature would be interested in, and perhaps you could help coordinate that.
Very good.
Thank you. Anything else for Dave? Dooley?
I noticed in the Ellis Hollow Road resolution that the percentage available for any change orders is 3.5%. It seems very low to me, and I wondered why. And maybe Joe knows.
I think that's a question we'd have to refer to Jeff Smith. I don't know that level of detail in that project.
Anything else? Let's go to Economic Development Committee. Martha Robertson chairs that.
Thank you. I want to thank Will for making the report. At the last legislature meeting about our early April committee meeting, we had the tourism grants on tonight's consent agenda, and I have one resolution. But the committee hasn't met again since the last legislature meeting. So we next meet on May 4th, Monday, at 3:30 in the old jail. I have resolution N.
Let me just see if there are any questions before we get to your resolution. Okay, go ahead, Martha.
Number 5518, authorizing a public hearing on proposed local law number B of 2015, a local law to establish a sustainable energy loan program in Tompkins County. And I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Peter Stein. Discussion?
Well, this is a public hearing on the Energize New York program that we heard about in a couple of committee meetings last year. And then there was a training that included members of the public and members of the city staff and electeds, because this is available to through either the county or the city in Tompkins County. And if this is passed, this will become an opportunity for anybody with a commercial building, a multifamily residential building, or say a nonprofit building as well, to do retrofits for energy efficiency or to put renewables in. And this would be a low-cost loan program that gets paid off on your property tax bill over time. So if we accept this and do this, it would apply to any property outside the city of Ithaca within Tompkins County. So public hearing would be next legislature meeting, May 5th.
Okay. Let's have a question from Carol, then Kathy Lucera. And then Dooley.
I'm blanking. Would we expect to vote on this the same night that we have the hearing, or would it come back?
I'd like to get it going. We've had lots of discussions about it. We had a whole training or two about it, and I don't anticipate any reason to hold it up.
That's been our plan. You certainly have the ability to postpone it if you'd like to, but our plan has been to bring the legislation to the same meeting after the public hearing.
Kathy?
Thank you. I like this idea, consistent with my usual remarks and questions. Is there any encouragement or recognition of the importance of utilizing local labor, utilizing local sourcing, and the importance of this kind of preference, at least?
My understanding is we have virtually nothing to do with how this is run. It's a state program, and it's state money, comes from NYSERDA, and we need to approve it because we're part of the collection system on somebody's property tax bill. But we, I don't know even, Joe, if we can make requests like that. There are a lot of criteria that it's a state, as I said, it's a statewide program available to counties and cities. I don't know if we can ask for tweaks to it.
Yeah, I don't know that either. I know that the contractors all have to be certified. I mean, they have to be legitimate contractors, that they have to pass muster with this group. So, and I think the nature of these projects probably lends itself to local contractors. These are not usually giant projects. They are the right size kinds of projects to lend themselves to local labor. So we can talk to them about it, Kathy, but I think Martha's right. It's kind of arm's length. We're the financing arm, and then the work on the contract side is done through the agency and the building owners.
Go ahead, Kathy.
Thank you. Well, first of all, we know that in this county, it's difficult for us to say we can't do anything about this. But I want to say I completely support this, and I think that there's an opportunity here for us to measure the results of this loan program, and that in measuring it, we can find benchmarks for us in terms of more efficiently utilizing local labor and local sourcing. And I'd like for us to be cognizant of that, and I know that there might be staff time involved, but in terms of reporting or other things like that, it shouldn't be that hard to add a question or two when we're doing reporting on this. And I think it would be really helpful to us, especially since it's consistent with our sustainability plan and our philosophy. So I'm not asking to reinvent the wheel. I think that the first year of this is going to be great for us, and why not use it as a baseline for improving our consistency in terms of what we say and what we do. Using local contractors is wonderful. Using as much as possible local sourcing or made in USA sourcing for renewable energy contracting is a wonderful thing. Just because it comes down from New York State doesn't mean we can't measure what the results are.
Julie?
Yeah, I can just say the Energy Improvement Corporation that actually manages this and administers this program, they have to approve whatever the project is that the property owner proposes. I mean, I think we certainly can make a request and see if that's an option. That be part of the approval.
Julie.
I took some of Jonathan's time today because I was a little concerned about, I had some questions about this, and I was given to understand that you pretty much can't tamper with this resolution at all. They have a form, and this is what they want us to pass. So I will mention a couple of my questions on packet page 39 in section 8C. It says the rate of interest for the charge shall be fixed by EIC acting on behalf of the county at the time the agreement is executed. The EIC acts on behalf of the county. I gather that we have to have some kind of contract with them to implement this, and it would seem to me that in the contract we have to implement it, we should be able to include the kinds of things that Kathy was just speaking about. And that if we have concerns about rates of interest, which I don't have any specific language about, we could say something about that at this point in a contract. Similarly, under Section 9A, the EIC shall be responsible for verifying and reporting to the county on the installation and performance of this. It seemed to me that we should specify whether that reporting to us is every minute or once a year. And Jonathan said he thinks that that kind of reporting, this when it, how frequently it happens, is probably in the contract also. So I'm thinking that maybe we should, as a legislature, have a chance to look at that contract and see if it has, this is not unlike fast track. You're negotiating something. But if there are things that we feel strongly about that could be in the contract, it would be nice to put them in. So I guess that's a question for Joe more than anybody else.
Well, we can look at it. And again, I think we need to strike the right balance. Kathy Luce has suggested maybe there's a way to weave a benchmarking in here to look at performance and those kinds of things. That seems pretty reasonable and doable. To Martha's point, we have a very limited role in this. And there does have to be an understanding how this is going to work, the relationships. Our role is basically a vehicle. It's not even a financing arm. It's a vehicle to ensure the collection of the financing that's provided. So it's a very limited role. So I think we have to balance some of the objectives that we've had, we've talked about tonight, with the fact that we really want this to be a nimble system of providing financing to do the kind of work that we know needs to be done, which is in the energy conservation and renewal front. So, you know, as we go forward and look at that relationship with them, sure, we can take a look at some of these things. I just think we have to be careful in terms of how much we might put into that agreement.
How close to finality is the agreement?
To be honest, they say they're not going to change the agreement at all. They kind of view the agreement as pretty broad, that they may be able to do certain things we request like that within the terms of the agreement, but they're not going to change the terms of the agreement. They're not going to add things.
Carol?
That's a very uncomfortable
response. I got that email
response
today. You probably haven't
seen
it.
That
yeah.
That's bad.
Carol? It doesn't inspire confidence.
No, it doesn't. Not at all.
Carol?
Yeah, so... I've been really excited about this program, and the parts of it that I was been emphasizing when I talked to people and in my own mind about why it's really good for our county is, you know, we live in a northern climate. We have a lot of older stock, both large-scale residential and commercial, institutional property that really could use what's been emphasized, which is energy efficiency improvements and renewable energy systems. And I asked the question, so I'm excited that we're moving forward on this, and I do think we ought to. It is a big step to be taking on the role that we're taking on, where we are essentially using a real public resource, the ability to carry through the expenses on your property tax bill, and it means we have to, our billing systems have to carry that forward, and we have to keep track of it. And so we are, you know, using public resources to support this in a lot of ways. And I asked the question that I did about the time frame. Whether we're going to approve it the same night that we have the hearing, because I do think we have an active group of residents who come out on things that we might not anticipate or expect. And one of them is, you know, the kinds of things that Kathy raised, the local labor. And the other is, when I used the word energy efficiency improvement, I was thinking of insulation and the other kinds of things that are listed here, window and door replacements, lighting, caulking, weather stripping. I was not thinking of the ways in which you might be able to use this, and I'd have to think about it some more, to install new fossil fuel systems, because heating and cooling system upgrades, I would have to think more about whether that works across purposes with our own comprehensive plan and ways in which we're trying to rein in new fossil fuel development. And I'm not sure, I was trying to think before I came here of examples. If you're replacing a really dirty, one of those wood burner, you know, large-scale wood burning systems, or coal burning systems, which still exist, one in the house I used to live in here, with new gas, if you do that one or two places, it's one thing. If it happens in a lot of places or very large scale commercial, then we hear the kind of thing we've been hearing, that there's not enough.
I'd like to...
So I would like to give the public time to weigh in on these kinds of things, or labor to weigh in on ways in which we might address this through definitions, through, you know, if we're going to sign on to use our own taxing authority
what
for
what
this,
I'd like to do is
to
point out tonight that what the action proposed is to schedule a public hearing.
So I'm asking...
We're not debating the actual
I'm asking
law.
That we not vote the same night.
Well,
that we have the, give
that's
the public
going to be up to
the
full legislature to decide whether or not to vote or not. But your comments are certainly
out of order.
Will be listened to tonight. I have two more people that want to speak. Martha wanted to respond, and then I have Jim Dennis, and I'd really like to get to a vote on this.
I do think it's the kind of thing we have weighed in on before, that something might be controversial enough that
comments.
We're not going to vote on it the
comments.
Same night as the hearing, and I think we have the ability to say that now.
Well, I don't know exactly how to carry that forth. You've made your point.
Well, the chair of the legislature or the committee could say...
That's not part of the resolution of when we're going to vote. So I don't think that's relevant.
Martha, you have the floor.
I sure as hell hope we don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good here. This is a way to enable people who may be trying to do the right thing. This enables them to put real money into a building that they're living in or doing business in, but they can't afford, you know, the upfront cost. They can't afford the investment. But this way, it can get spread out over however long they own the building, and then transfer to when somebody else buys the building. The theory being that if this is an improvement that goes into this building, it's forever as long as it functions, even if somebody's going to sell the business in 5 years. So finally, there's a mechanism that says I don't have to do the calculation and say, well, am I going to actually live here for 15 years if it'll take 15 years to pay back this improvement? We can't afford to wait. This is a tremendous opportunity, and I think, you know, my impression when I can't remember his name, Del Sindaco. When he came, maybe they don't want to put stuff in the law, and you know they don't want to write a new agreement for every single county. But my sense of it was he was going to work with us. He wanted to make this work for us. So let's try to see something that's a good thing,
Jim?
And take it by the. You know, and go with it.
Jim?
I'd like to call the question on the public hearing.
Is there a second for calling the question? Seconded by Kathy Luz Herrera. On the question of whether to call the question, all those in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? I have two opposed. So the question is called. So on the resolution N, authorizing the public hearing on proposed local law B, all those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Carol?
So I just ask that I not be interpreted, that my remarks not be interpreted as in any way being against this law. I don't think that asking to have some time in between, you know, when we do it regularly, as a matter of fact, I think whenever it has come up, that there might be comment, I think, if there's any question we have in the past. And, Martha, I really hope that you're not going to characterize me that way, because I've been quite supportive of this and was very impressed with Mr.
Why is this conversation?
I don't think we've done a lot of
these. Let's move on, folks. We're getting cranky. Let's not do
that. I don't think he's done a lot of these.
I want to move to Dan Klein's committee, Government Operations. Dan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have not met since the last time legislature met. Our next meeting will be a week from today, Tuesday, April 28th, 3:30 in this room.
Questions for Dan. Kathy.
Dan, I want to give you some time to respond to this, so I'm going to wind up slow. On the email, I witnessed a
rather lengthy and broad discussion regarding the possibility of changing, amending, adding to, or in some way reforming the new rules regarding privilege of the floor. As I read that, it wasn't clear to me whether decisions were made in this private discussion or whether there was an opinion expressed by the majority of the committee, which I think would have been unseemly, or if there was any move made to consider the suggested actions, or whether there was a decision not to act. It was very unclear to me, and I felt it wasn't very transparent, and I was really concerned about it because the public will never know that we were discussing this privately. I didn't add to the discussion because I was appalled, and I want to put out an alarm to everyone that this sort of thing is exactly the kind of private decision-making that I think we want to avoid and that we say we want to avoid.
I think there's no need for alarm at all. No decisions were made, not even close. The only decision that was made was that sometime in the future, on the agenda of the Government Operations Committee, we will bring up the subject of the blue cards again and the rules that are on the blue cards for speaking. Other than that, there was no decision made.
I'm relieved to hear that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Anything else for Dan? Thank you, Dan. Let's go to minutes of April 7th. Someone want to move those? Jim?
I will move those.
They're second. Seconded by Dave. Discussion? All those in favor of the minutes, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? Any unfinished business? Is there a motion to adjourn? By Will. Seconded by Dave. Those in favor? Those opposed? You're adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Good job.
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, Marcia.
So I don't have any.
Thank you, Jim.
Sure.